Hello and welcome to Charity Corner. I'm Rachel Goodfellow, the founder of the Hidden Needs Trust, a charity that creates awareness and raises funds to help support Dorset and Somerset special educational needs children and their families. And through my work, I've been introduced to a wide range of small charities, all supporting local causes. And so in this regular monthly programme, I go out and about, finding out what local charities and good causes are up to, visiting a few key people, and trying to see at first hand how their hard work benefits others in the community. I then see how other charities can network and help each other. So we have interviews with organisers and participants, and last week I went down to Crewkerne to visit the Men's Shed. I am with Peter Boothby-Smith at the Men's Shed in Crewkerne. Hello, Peter.
Yes, hi.
First of all, I have never been in before, but what a wonderful place it is. I can see it is an absolute hive of activity. Tell us how the Men's Shed started and the history behind it.
Well, I mean, if you want to go right back, the Men's Shed started in Australia, and then it came over here. And there's over 500 Men's Sheds in the UK, similar to this, doing the same sorts of things. And it's growing because we have an ageing population. People are far more aware of loneliness and depression, which incidentally is what we try and help avoid. And we've been endorsed by most of the medical people in the town. So that's where we came in. We started one here about 2 years ago. We had trouble finding a place to work, a venue. We did actually get into a disused pub for 9 months, and then sadly the guy wanted his pub back. So for a year we had nowhere, and then finally we got this place.
So, because this is literally on the very edge of Crewkerne, isn't it? So do most people come from the town itself?
Yes, most people come from the town, within walking distance of here. We do have a couple of guys that come from a little bit further. But mostly it's in the town. The sort of people we're trying to help maybe don't have a car or can't drive or won't drive. Mm. So it needs to be a central location where
yes.
people can have easy access to
Absolutely.
It. And this is perfect.
And how many of you are, in inverted commas, staff, as it were?
We're all volunteers, but we have a committee of, I think, about eight people that run the thing. And it seems to work out okay. I mean, it is a case that, you know, the willing horse gets loaded. So I'm trying to spread the load out a little bit and get more people to take on some of the responsibilities. Mm-hmm. But it's working. It's working very well. I'm very pleased with the response we've had since we've opened. I mean, we've been absolutely flooded with applications, which is very nice.
And can men literally walk off the street into here?
They can come in and ask for a form, and then we assess their capabilities. There's a star system that we have on our badges that says, you know, if you've got one star, you can go so far. Two stars, you can use some other machines. Three stars, you can use anything. You're right. Capable of using anything.
I bet you get some, across the board, very interesting mix of people.
We get people coming in who've, you know, never done any woodwork, and we introduce them under supervision to do simple jobs. And it's amazing how quickly they learn to do quite complex work. So I'm very pleased with what we do, and I'm very pleased with the impact it has on people that come in here.
Now, with us, we have Michael Fox as well. Now, interestingly, on the form, I have to ask you, because I've spied that men and women can come.
Oh, yes.
Is that right?
Yes, of course, yes. Yes, it's an interesting thing. There's a big debate about whether you should call it a men's shed or a community shed. There's one nearby in South Petherton, which is a community shed. We quite like sticking to the idea of calling it a men's shed, because for many men, they don't like the idea of getting out very much and doing things, And having something that is devoted to, that is clearly signposted as something for men, where, you know, you can get on and do whatever it is useful. But we're not, we welcome women, and right. we have some other people. I've got several women who've been talking to me about various ideas they have for doing things, like setting up an art group. Someone wants to come do picture framing, a fix-it club for sewing and knitting, where people can bring in items and do those sorts of things. So there's lots of interest from all sorts of people. But the reason we're still called a men's shed is this idea of helping to get people, men, out from their sheds, mm-hmm. their own garden sheds, and come and meet other people and share skills and
absolutely.
And do things together.
And I was asking you earlier about funding.
Yes.
That awful question of funding.
Yes.
Who funds this?
When we were open last year, as Peter was saying, we did do fairly well in terms of having subscriptions coming in, and we've got some funds of our own. We've also been successful in getting the town council and the district council to give us some money. And our landlord here approached us out of the blue, and this is this amazing moment for us all, because we have this lovely space, which is an old shop. It used to be Millie's Antiques most recently on East Street. And it's lovely and light and airy. It's got big windows, and we've got an upstairs as well. And it's much more space than we thought we'd have. And Richard, our landlord, is a big supporter, and he's helped us tremendously by giving us a rent holiday at the beginning, and we're going to have some sort of negotiated social rent in the future. So that's going to help with our funding. Mm-hmm. And we've also had grants from the Rotary Clubs in Crewkerne. So we're quite well off at the moment. The big issue is keeping it going and making mm-hmm. sure that we have enough people coming in and using the place, and so we can, you know, have revenue from people coming and working here and also selling their produce. And we hope to go to sort of craft fairs and things in the future and sell
right.
things there.
Because looking around, there are obviously items for sale, so people can come in and look around and buy them.
Yes,
yeah?
Yes.
And there's some beautiful stuff, I have to say. You were saying about people bringing things in to be mended as well.
Yes.
Is that something that they then pay for? There's a
yes.
small charge?
Yes, they make a contribution. So we've fixed up tables and chairs, and most recently, we fixed up someone brought in an antique puzzle. Someone just lives up the road. And we made the pieces for it. And there's a fork waiting to be fixed there. We're fixing up a weather vane. And we've made a lid for a bread crock as well. So there's all sorts of things we've been doing the last few weeks.
Superb.
And we also have made stuff to commission. So we've made a table, some commission from us. So
right.
There very wide range of skills here. There's another committee member is a finisher. He can transform an old something you see down in the auction down at Lawrence's, and he can transform it into something looking modern and fresh with all his techniques of painting and finishing.
So this is the place to come for everything.
Absolutely.
From restoration to rehab, the whole lot. That's fantastic.
And also we've got the space to hold talks, and upstairs we've got chairs given to us by the Speedwell Hall, and we've got the potential. There's huge potential here because it's such a lovely place.
So do you think there'd be scope for other charities to come and do talks?
Definitely,
here?
Yes.
You were saying about possibly in the future doing actual courses here?
Yes. They would probably be sort of once a week. This is all to be decided. We're only in our first month and we're sort of still settling down, and it's working out what people can offer and and what people are interested in doing. So yes, we can do courses in wood turning or basic carpentry, or Mick can do a course in finishing maybe. We're at the very beginnings of this.
Absolutely.
It's very exciting, the different ways we could go.
Yeah, there are so many different avenues, aren't there? And of course, you were saying that you've been donated some of this equipment, haven't you?
Yes. We've been very lucky that most of our equipment has been donated. We've recently were given some very useful tools by someone who'd unfortunately died very suddenly, by his wife and daughter, and so we're very grateful for that sort of support as well.
When you were looking at what other people in the community can do and help with, what would you sort of say was the biggest thing that you'd want help with?
I think just coming along and pitching in and getting involved. I think that's
right.
Now that's the most important thing. We want people to come along and use the facility, and then
okay.
we have this space. It's for the community, and we'd love to see more, as many people as possible.
It is wonderful.
Here using it.
If people want to know more about it, where can they find more information?
We have a website in development and a Facebook presence. So if you search for Crewkerne Men's Shed on Facebook, you'll find us.
Well, also, of course, your details will be going on my website. That's hiddenneedstrust.org. And, of course, the recordings are going to be there forevermore.
We are also quite old school. We've got posters around town.
Oh, yeah, I like posters. That's
and
good.
And then we've got to, when they are fit, if you just basically just come along, we're open from on Tuesdays at 10 o'clock until 1 o'clock in lunchtime, and then in the afternoons on Thursdays from 1 o'clock till 4 right. o'clock.
Peter's coming to have a bit more of a chat.
As was said, there is another shed nearby in South Petherton. They've decided not to use the name Men's Shed, and in that way they're not associated with Men's Shed UK. They've called themselves Community Shed. Why? You know, it's their choice. But we are the Men's Shed because we are affiliated with Men's Shed UK, and that way we get special deals on tools, on insurance and stuff like that. We do encourage ladies to join. In fact, we've got about three or four lady members, and we do encourage them to come along. If you look at our logo, you can see there are ladies working on the logo that makes it very clear that ladies are very welcome here, despite the fact we call ourselves Men's Shed. But that's purely for the affiliation and recognition. I mean, all over the country, people recognise the Men's Shed. And all over the country, the Men's Shed have got lady members. So we want to just keep with that recognition. And, of course, we encourage ladies to come in and join us.
That's actually really important, isn't it, to be affiliated with something that is nationally known.
Yes.
I presume you can sort of get all sorts of ideas from other venues then, which is really helpful.
Yes, we can. We can visit other venues. Their website does come up with ideas for what we can do and things like that. I think it's important to be part of the general national identity, if you like.
Wow, what a wonderful place. And here in the studio is Terry, of course, as usual. Hello, Terry.
Good morning, Rachel.
So what did you think of it?
Well, it was a very interesting place, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. They've set it all up and there's a real enthusiasm about it.
Very much so. We didn't see upstairs, did we?
No.
But the scope to use upstairs is huge, whether it's for courses or to do talks. And I'm sure they'd invite other charities to come and use their venue, which would, of course, help them promote it. And if more people get involved, maybe they'll be able to actually open longer, which would be fantastic. But of course, it's right in the hub of Crewkerne, isn't it?
Yes.
So as they were saying, people walk there, so it's easily accessible. And yeah, absolutely.
And it's a great outlet for people who have a need to go and socialise and develop skills and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And in fact, I was talking to Michael afterwards and we were talking about the courses and possibly him looking into adult learning type courses there, which of course I used to work under, and I'm sure they would absolutely love to set up some sort of group there. So do go and have a look if you possibly can, and remember all the details will be on my website hiddenneedstrust.org for the future. Now, we've come to an end of a very exciting few weeks, which I sadly haven't really been involved with, in fact, I haven't been involved with, but Terry, you have, because the Chernobyl children are going back on Sunday after a wonderful few weeks.
Yes, this interview is pre-recorded as we're sitting here today, but when this goes out at 12 o'clock on Sunday, the children from Chernobyl will be on their way back in their little minibus back to Gatwick Airport, where they'll be flying home to Belarus. And for those that don't know, the Chernobyl Children's Lifeline is a national charity, but it has a number of local branches across the country. And the Sherborne and Yeovil link, which is run by a wonderful lady called Anne Horrocks, hosts a number of children each year from the still affected areas of Belarus and Ukraine that are still suffering 33 years on from the Chernobyl disaster. And this year we've seen 12 children come across from a town called Stolin, which is in the southern part of Belarus. They come with an interpreter, who's a lady called Zana Paskevich. And I was lucky enough to interview Zana and Anne on my programme on Abbey 104 a week or so back. And I thought it'd be interesting just to play a little bit from Zana's interview. Now, here she's talking about what the charity does and the children that come across to the UK each year.
Most parents of these children are just unemployed, you know, because they don't have a lot of job. We don't have a lot of jobs available in our area. And most of them, they just work hard in their gardens. They have big gardens and they work hard growing vegetables and fruits and sell them to try to get some money.
I see. So it's a fairly frugal existence, and they haven't got much money.
Yes. Children who come over here mostly from needy families, from poor families.
Tell me how you go about selecting the children that come across, because I guess that a lot of children are needy and would benefit from this, and certainly from the health point of view, they would probably all benefit from it.
Yes. About 500,000 children still live in contaminated area. Of course, it's impossible to bring them all, you know, but these are children that are just lucky children. They are chosen at schools, you know, they must be from needy families. It should be their first trip with the charity. Just luck, I think.
So they get nominated by their school, do they?
Yes, yes, by their schools, yes.
And somebody goes through the process and whittles it down to...
Yes, some of them have big families, you know, some of them are from single-parent families, but all of them are from needy, poor families. Mm.
Tell me a little bit about the health effects. The disaster was in 1986. It's worth saying that the distance between the Chernobyl nuclear plant and Stolin is only about 245 kilometres as the crow flies, which is quite close, isn't it?
Yes, it is very close. Yeah.
What in the immediate after effects, was the town evacuated or did people just stay there?
No, people from our area were not evacuated, but there were a lot of places in our country where people were evacuated from. They were closer to the to Chernobyl. Yes, it was in Gomel area. It's a big city. And they were thinking about evacuating people from this big city. The population is about 1 million people, yes, but they couldn't do it. Our people were not evacuated, but I remember the time because I was born in this area and I was 13 years old when it happened. And I clearly remember many families just moved to different parts. Who could do it? You know, they moved to maybe their relatives, to their friends, to other parts of Belarus, which were less contaminated, or even to Russia, and they stay there now. A lot of people just couldn't do it. I remember that those days, you know, I just remember a few days after when it happened, it started raining, and the rain was white. I don't remember. We didn't understand why it was white, you know, but it's probably something was in the air and was falling down on the on the ground on us. Yes, and it was everything was white. The trees, the grass was white, you know, and this was the worst thing. And unfortunately, people didn't know about it. Nobody told us that it was a very terrible disaster happened, you know. And probably it influenced a lot on people's health because next generations suffer even more. Because as for me, I was only 13 years old and now I have children, my own children, and I hope I will have grandchildren. And unfortunately, this radiation affects not only our generation and next generations as well. And what about diseases? Of course, we have lots of diseases. Our children have very weak immune system. You know, they have lots of problems. Of course, cancer is the problem number one with children and adults as well. And I remember last year we had a boy who just jumped over and broke his heel. It's just because our children have very weak bones, you know, and it's very easy to break. Unfortunately, yes, we have lots of problems with health.
And it's notable that we're now 33 years on from that.
33, yeah.
And you know, the children of today that you've brought across were born in maybe 2009 or thereabouts, but it's still sufficiently radioactive there that they still suffer the effects. It's not just their parents.
Yes, it's not just their parents because they still are in. They live in contaminated areas. They have contaminated food. They drink contaminated water. You know, they still in contaminated environment, and this is the worst thing.
And that affects their, as you say, their immune systems and their bone density and all of those.
And yes, and we have lots of problems with eyes, teeth. You know, we have some tests at school for children, and every year we have more and more children who suffer from different kinds of diseases.
What is the healthcare regime like in Belarus? Is it adequate?
it's not too bad, but the problem is that we don't have enough doctors. You know, we still have a lot of doctors, but not enough, and especially in the villages. And also equipment, medical equipment is not good enough to make this all these tests. This is a problem, because if you diagnose a disease earlier, it would be much better to treat. But if it's late, it's late. Sure. You can't do anything with it, unfortunately.
Sure. Now, part of the process that goes on over here is to get the children to see a dentist and an optician, because this is presumably something that they don't get at home, is it, Sarah?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because they can visit a dentist, but they should pay. And these children are from poor families, and they just can't afford to do it.
No, they can see a doctor. Okay,
Yes, they can see a doctor. Yeah. Yes.
But then, leading on from that, if they're diagnosed with something that needs treating. What's the follow-up like?
If they need any treatment, of course, they can go to bigger places, to bigger hospitals, you know, but it's also not easy because they're overfull. You know, there's so many people who need treatment in the country, you know, and that sometimes they just can't get it.
Incredible, isn't it? Incredible what they're doing.
It's a remarkable charity, and I have to say that Zana, who you heard there, was an absolutely outstanding woman.
Right.
Bringing these children across, as she has done for the past 21 years.
My goodness.
12 of them for 4 weeks.
My goodness.
And she's in sole charge, and she's the only one that speaks the language. It's not to be undertaken lightly, is it?
No. So if people want to get involved next year, Where can they go to find out?
Well, there's lots
out?
Of opportunities to get involved. If you want to get fully involved, you could be a host family.
Right.
So those are volunteer host families who actually take the children and keep them for the 4 weeks and look after them and do everything that you would with children. So that's the sort of ultimate involvement, I suppose. But beyond that, if you don't want to go that far in, they're always looking for helpers to assist with days out, because there is a program of activities organised for them. Or for people to drive the minibus, or of course to go and fundraise for the charity. So all of those details, if you just do a simple search on Chernobyl Children's Lifeline, you will come up with the main page, and then it's the Sherborne and Yeovil link that is
Perfect.
Local. And Anne Horrocks would be delighted to hear from
I'm
anybody.
Sure she would. Anyway, let's have a look at what's on next. Do you know what? August is going to be quite busy, believe it or not. This Sunday there is a yard sale at West Noyle, at one of the farms there, and the money that they are raising is going to something called the Eve Appeal. Now, I'm not quite sure what that is, but do go along. Apparently, there's all sorts going on there in this yard sale. You know, anything from cutlery and crockery to garden furniture, children's toys, masses of books, etc. So do go along and have a look at that. And then the following Saturday, in the Digby Memorial Hall, which is in Digby Road in Sherborne, from 9 till 4, there is a charity tabletop sale. And if you wanted a table, the tables are £10 or £15 for two. And booking is through Ken Loader, and his details are actually in the Blackmore Vale, but he has got a phone number, which is 01935 813 967. And the proceeds are going towards Corndall Marsh Church. And you've got something as well, before I then carry on.
I have. Just looking in the Abbey book, we've got the Holnest Church Fete, which is on Saturday, August the 17th, from 1pm to 4pm. The proceeds are in favour of the Holnest Church Fund. And there is on offer cream teas, cakes, stalls, tombola plants, skittles, raffle and barbecue, and an art and scarecrow competition and displays, and a fun dog show at 2pm. And the Holnest Church Flower Festival is following day, Sunday, August the 18th, with many attractions there, and a Songs of Praise at 4:30. So that's Holnest Church Fete on Saturday, August the 17th.
Good. Well, on August the 17th as well, I'm sure lots of people who listen to the programme will remember Erik Jaeger. Now, Erik is the Flying Dutchman, as we call him. He does lots of running, and he's going to go over to the Netherlands to do a run for the Ruach Foundation. If you look back into the Charity Corner files, you'll be able to hear his full interview, but he has sent me another email because he's going to be doing a practice run on August the 17th, starting from his home in the middle of Sherborne and going all around Dorset. So if you see him, give him a wave. He's going to be raising money on the actual run in the Netherlands for not just the Ruart Foundation, which supports underprivileged children, but also for my Hidden Needs Trust. So that'll be good. So good luck, Eric. But he has sent me an email saying that, if possible, donations via the Global Giving website as soon as possible after Monday the 12th of August, because then they start getting, you know, the added donations and so on. And he's actually doing this training run on the 17th of August. And again, if you get on the Hidden Needs Trust website, you'll see all the details. And then on the 18th of August, Communifit from Sherborne, starting at the terraces, they've got their 5K run. You can run, walk, hop, wobble, whatever you want to do. And as per usual, they are raising some funds for a local charity. And guess what? I'm very lucky they're doing it for me this time. So I will be there with my banners and so on. So do look out for that. And some really, really good news. The Blackmore Vale Business Awards finalists list has come out. And Julie Plumley, I think she was on the very first Charity Corner, wasn't she? She has been nominated for two categories, the Contribution to the Community Award and the Customer Service Award. So well done, Julie.
Good for Julie.
Absolutely. And there's all sorts going on before, but then on the 19th of September is the formal dinner and the award ceremony.
Splendid.
Good luck.
Very good. Are we done?
Yes, I think so.
We're back on the 1st of
September. 1st of September. And we have a very interesting chap coming up from Lyme Regis, I hope, to do with a wood charity, oh, as in trees. Yeah. And if you want to be on the programme, do get in touch.
Bye for now.
Bye.